This is Hook Court in Dorset, and we reckon that most of what you can see here dates to the English Civil War in the mid-1600s. But there are clues that there was once something much older and grander here. Take a look at this. You see this huge moat? That is in the back garden. Now, as far as I know, a moat means a castle or a grand medieval house. So on this island, there could be something here from the Middle Ages, maybe even from the time of William the Conqueror himself. These days, Hook Court is used as a school, and the teachers would love to be able to tell the kids more about its history. But you don't know very much about it, do you, Mandy?
No, not very much at all. And we'd love you to find out more.
So, who is it that Mandy's called in?
Time Team!
And how long have we got to find out anything?
3 days!
Do you think we'll find anything under the grass, JJ?
Yes.
What sort of stuff?
Brick walls and doors.
Yeah, we always find brick walls, but not doors so often, do we? Keep your fingers crossed. The village of Hook, or Le Hoc as it was known in medieval times, gets its name because it was once located in the Hook or bend of the river. Hook Court School, situated on a ridge of high ground, would always have been a prime spot for occupation. What's really neat about this place is that anything medieval is going to be inside the moat, which means we can limit our dig to this lawn area here. Already we've got Geophys looking for any potential buildings under the lawn. We've got Henry and Stuart over there. They're trying to work out the full sweep of the moat. And on the other side of this place, there's Jonathan looking for evidence in the fabric of the building itself. And we've got Sam, our historian, trawling through the records. What do we know so far?
We've got a lot of names. Some of which go back to late Anglo-Saxon times via the Domesday Book.
Wow, that far.
But how it relates to this site remains to be seen.
We've got lots of bits of information, you see, of different dates, but it doesn't sort of hang together. I mean, for example, it looks as if the whole place is burnt down in the Civil War.
It is quite hard to talk to him properly when all this is going on. What's all this about?
I broke another limb, I'm afraid. I did one of my plummets off a wall.
I think it's probably another excuse to prevent you having to do any digging. Jonathan, is all this from the Civil War?
Well, the thing is, I think it's a good deal older. Now, the central problem is the Victorians are too good at neatening things up, OK? Here's a photograph of it. Take the porch out of the equation.
Yeah. The Victorians added a porch and this extension. But the big news is that Jonathan reckons this house wasn't built after the Civil War. He can see traces of a medieval building.
You've got a whole line of coin stones. These are the cornerstones
that
tell you have an original external corner. Right. So you have those on both sides. There. Then what you're left, this goes up to about that high. So you've got the makings of something like a block, possibly a tower block.
An analysis of the different window styles has enabled Jonathan to work out the story of this building.
I would guess that this whole area is a 15th century block to which was added a Tudor block there, a bit of refenestration going on, and then there's the 17th century upper story.
This is the Civil War.
This is a Civil War thing which neatens up the whole thing.
But these tiny medieval windows are the best clues because they tell us about the function of the original building.
These are lighting small chambers off bedrooms. These are garderobe chambers. So it's smart lodgings. Yeah.
Jonathan reckons this was part of a medieval manor house, and he's got Victor to sketch what it might have looked like in the 15th century. So which would be the bit that we can currently see?
We're standing about here, looking at the remains of this. But beyond that tower, well,
there are a whole array of standard features in a medieval house. We've got, for example, the gatehouse there, and that leads you through to a great hall. But, you know, the gatehouse might have been on another side. The hall could have been elsewhere.
So clearly this accommodation block wasn't destroyed by fire during the Civil War, but it's the only bit that still survives. Our job is to look for the rest of the manor house, which should be in this area defined by the moat. Sounds quite easy, doesn't it? The trouble is, there could be 500 years of different buildings buried under this lawn, because the Domesday Book records that there was a manor here way back in the 11th century. Knowing it might be a tad complicated, Mick wants to wait for GeoPhys to survey a large area of the lawn before we decide where to dig. This also gives us time to talk to Christopher Reed, who was deputy headmaster here in the 1960s. He's brought some photos to show us of a now-demolished north wing.
So, over here, this is where we were all looking at the front of the building this morning?
Yes, yes.
So, what's this building here?
This is the building that was demolished.
Crucially, these photos show that the old north wing was originally part of the medieval manor house.
Jonathan, what are these things here?
Well, beautiful tall windows. I mean, for the point of the arch, I wouldn't be surprised if that's a 15th century one. But is that the only one, Chris, in the facade?
No, I think there are others along the wall between these buttresses, as you can see evidence of buttresses.
Well, here it is. Look, it's been opened up. So is that what you did to have a look?
Oh, I didn't do it. It just fell.
That's what they all say, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
So what happened to all the stuff that they knocked down?
Oh, carted away. Carted away.
Chris has always thought this building must have been the Great Hall, but Jonathan's not so sure.
Some way above these arches, and you'd expect a hall just to be a single-storey building, but this looks like it's two floors. Tell you what, though, it wasn't only a medieval building that was lost, was it? Some of the art class's finest works.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll tell you who I know drew that. It's this bloke here.
Although this block of modern classrooms has been built on the site of the old north wing, it looks like it doesn't occupy the entire footprint of the old building. So we're going to open up a couple of trenches here to see if any foundations still survive that can tell us a bit more about the medieval building that once stood here. But right now, the real excitement is in here.
John. Is this stuff as good as we thought it would be?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Look, this is the resistance. You can see clearly the moat there, the building. So high resistance is in black. So look at these wall lines. It looks like we've got a whole range coming across on that line. And then whether these are walls within the courtyard or not, we don't know yet.
Could be gardens, I suppose, couldn't they?
But look at the GPR, the radar. This is absolutely fantastic. This is at the top. And going more deeply into the ground. Again, the wall showing so clearly.
So what's that? That's only 12 centimetres down there.
We're doing it in spits, sort of 10 centimetres in size.
What's this big blob then?
Whether that's a large fireplace within the two walls.
Yeah. What's the distance between the two side walls? How wide is that range?
Well, that's 20 metres. We're talking 15, 16 metres.
That's a big building.
Well, as Phil will tell you, there's only one true way to find out what's buried under here, and that's by digging. So, taking care not to ruin the school lawn, another trench goes in to reveal the hidden history of Hook Court. The legend is that there was a fire here in the Civil War, and clearly the kids are hoping we can find out more about it. Others, though, are just as excited to see so much surviving in the ground.
Oh, look,
there's so many.
On a right angle.
So many walls.
And it's only a matter of seconds before Phil turns up the first find.
Yeah, maybe 16, 17. There's a roof. Nice nail hole in there, look.
And you're getting this, which is 16th, 17th, bit of bone as well.
16th, 17th?
Something like that, yeah.
That'd be a good candidate for when it's, you know, being heftily destroyed.
Yeah. There's no later stuff either.
So that's good. Let's carry on, Ian, please.
This is our house burning in the English Civil War, but this isn't Victor's work. This is Bridget, age 7, and this one is Tom, age 6.
Do we have very many more details other than the fact that it just went up in loads of flames?
We know there was a fire. The whole building might not have been destroyed, but there was certainly enough rubble to make it worthwhile paying a mason, and we have the account, this is the priceless information we've got, paying a mason 5 shillings to retrieve 1,500 weight of lead from the ruins.
Who owned the place?
At that time, it had been just sequestered by Parliament from John Powlett, the fifth Marquess of Winchester.
This is the guy who owned Basing House by Basingstoke, which we dug, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
Exactly, yes, a very interesting guy, a great siege, dramatic moment in history, and John Powlett was a very senior royalist figure and a focus for resistance to Parliament.
So was it burnt down to punish him, or was it already a barracks or something like that?
It would not be in their interest to burn it to punish him because it was a profit that they'd acquired, sequestered it, but it may have been burnt while the war was still going on to deny its use to other royalist forces.
Wait. Oh, look, there's the...
Yeah.
There's a new brake.
Look, full profile.
Oh, no, look at that. Yeah. Full profile.
I bet that bit goes on the top as well, does it? There you go, Mike. Is that going in?
No. There? Oh, it's a spout, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a big pension.
Look,
big
there's a spout, look.
Yeah. That's the sort of thing you'd be expecting to see in the 16th, 17th century.
Away from the excitement of the trenches, Henry's got the job of finding the complete circuit of the moat. Helpfully, there's already proof that it continued around here along the back of the now-demolished north wing.
You're standing right on the corner...
Oh, right here?
Right on the corner of the moat.
OK.
..which went alongside, up against the building here.
Oh, so where's that on the...
Here's us on the photograph. This is the heating system built into the moat, and the steps are down here.
So whereabouts are we stood now?
You're stood about here.
Oh, so we're right on the moat?
You're right on the edge of the moat.
OK.
Yes.
So we're not doing badly. We've got a 15th-century living quarters here, and another 15th-century building which we're digging the foundations of here, and now we know that the moat extended at least this far around it. Because our mystery building's 2 stories high, the thinking is that it's not the Great Hall. Jonathan reckons that's most likely where Phil's digging on this side of the lawn. But so far, all Phil's discovered is masses of Civil War period pottery.
It's all the sort of stuff you'd expect to find in the kitchen. There's none of your posh tableware here, it's all big mixing bowls. But we're getting things like glazed roof tiles, so, you know, nice posh roof. Bonus, we've got 16th or 17th century goblet.
That is pretty, isn't it?
It's a beautiful decoration around there, possibly Venetian. I don't know enough about these things to be certain, but that's a posh piece of glassware. That's not the sort of thing a peasant had been drinking out of, I'll tell you.
But the stuff we're really after is turning up in our trenches in the schoolyard.
Oh, look at that. Oh, that's great.
Oh, that is lovely. It's a base.
Yeah, it's medieval. It's this flinty stuff. The key to the early pottery around here seems to be flint and lots of it.
Right.
And this has got flint and lots of it.
Right, what do we have to do, Neil?
It's
the first medieval pottery we've found, the first evidence of life here before the 15th century. And graphics have come up with a neat way to show the kids what it looked like.
And then... I suppose expression's good, isn't it?
Like, no, feel the weight. Feel the weight as well. That's it. Feel it. It's really heavy.
Yeah.
Is it out of the way, Neil? Oh, feel that weight in your muscles.
Don't drop it.
Oh, what is it that they're carrying that is so agonisingly heavy?
It's lunch. It's a 12th, 13th century cooking pot. It's based on a bit we found outside. Probably got sort of thing that would have been put on the fire, even had bits of soot on the outside of it.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, go! Whoops. Out on the lawn, Matt's now opened up a second trench with some promising early results.
I've got your wall, Jonathan.
Good man. That's very definite, isn't it?
Yep. Quite a nice or a very strong edge across there. It's pretty sturdy.
Tell you what I was looking for, Matt. Along there is the corner of that 15th century block.
Yep.
Now, we don't know how far it extended this way. I was hoping that some way... that you'd find some way of picking up the footings as they run down here.
We have got the start of a cut going across there, but, I mean, it might be a robbed-out wall or something like that, so there's something there.
Well, it might be, but you've got a wall, but it's the wrong one.
No, it's the right one, it's just in the wrong place.
Matt's wall is also very different to the one Phil's now unearthed in his trench. They're obviously not the same building. We're going to have to extend both trenches to see more of them. But what's clear to me now is that detecting the buried walls with geophys is one thing, but sorting out one phase of building from another is going to be a massive challenge over the next couple of days. But it hasn't been a bad start, and I want to use a bit of graphics magic to show Mandy what we have sorted out. Here is the house as it is now, and if you do away with the 19th century extension over there, and in addition to that, another 19th century thing, if we get rid of this porchway just there, it's gone, and then there's this 17th century top bit, just lose all of that. And then we've got two 16th century things here and here. Off they go. And then, apart from fiddling around with a few of these windows, what we've got left is the part of the building which is here now, which was here in the 15th century.
That's fantastic.
Not bad for one day, is it?
No, not at all. It's amazing.
Mind you, that's only one bit of the house. Let's hope we find more of it over there tomorrow.
It's day two here at Hook Court in Dorset and time to be digging up our lawn.
We're looking for a forgotten medieval manor house, which we think is underneath the grass.
Connie, that was superb. Thank you very much. We reckon that this here is a medieval moat. And this slope here, this is part of an island inside of which there ought to be a buried medieval manor house, except it's likely to be very complicated with lots of different phases in it. So the first thing that we need to do today is to pull all the archaeologists together to find out what strategy we need to adopt, because how many days have we got left?
Two days.
Can't get the staff. Yesterday, we opened up two trenches to look at walls that we thought might be part of one massive building, the Great Hall. But it soon became clear that this wall in Phil's trench is very different to the one Matt's unearthed here.
Matt's wall there is 4 feet wide. That's a socking great piece of kit, and that held up a big chunky roof. Things we don't know what that building was.
Well, we've got some clues, haven't we? Look at the size of these roof slates. Yeah. Presumably there's something there that's
the
really
heck of a
big.
Roof to it hold is, that on yeah. top, isn't it? Yeah.
But the function, what is it? Was it a hall? I mean, what does this shape suggest? I mean, I'm seeing it now at a slightly larger resolution. And to me, there's a rectangle there. You could interpret that, couldn't you?
Yeah,
but there's another one coming in this way.
So what they're implying then is that this is a palimpsest.
Oh, very good.
You've learned something.
It's lots of different walls from different periods.
That's right. Exactly. And I think to understand these two, we've probably got to link these two trenches up and actually see what the relationship of those are. Because they're clearly, as Phil says, they're clearly different.
Do you think it's fair to say that there is a great hall here, but we just can't see it? It's somewhere in there rather than being the thing itself.
I think we might be looking at a narrower building than was first suggested by the geophys. But I think Matt's trench is the key one. There lies a large building, and it's finding the opposite wall of that on which this roof once stood.
As well as looking for the other side wall of a possible great hall, Mick wants to put a trench in to find the end wall. But it looks very complicated in this area of the geophys plot, so how do we go about digging it?
So what, would you put a diagonal in to look at that?
I prefer an owl shape. I
mean, like, right,
okay. No, we don't laugh.
I never laugh at you, Phil.
Look, you do, all the time. Look, now, the fact of the matter, you want to go right angles across a wall. So right, I think so, anyway.
Yep. So the first job is to extend Matt's trench to see more of the big wall, and also to join it up with Phil's trench, which hopefully will reveal another 4-foot-wide wall to locate our great hall.
You can see the date. We've got the pieces of paper with the date of it all on. Yeah.
All the pottery has been put into a timeline for the kids, and the bulk of it comes from the 17th century, when it looks like many of the buildings were demolished after having been damaged in the Civil War.
Tom, any ideas why you think there may be only a few pieces of pottery here? JJ, possibly?
They haven't dug deep enough.
Possibly, they might not have dug deep enough.
Anybody know what that is?
Clay pipe.
Yeah, that's right.
Some of the tobacco pipes date to the 1640s, precisely the time of the Civil War, and the kids are fascinated by them.
You could always tell the difference between a gentleman and a labourer, because these pipes originally had really, really long stems, yeah? Something like 3 feet long. Now, gentlemen who didn't have to work for a living would keep their pipes long, so they'd smoke them with the full-length stem. Workers, because they had to keep their hands free to work, would snap the stem off near the bowl and crunch it in their teeth like this. That's what they'd be working. with a pipe like that. And you dig up skeletons, and you sometimes find a big notch worn into their teeth because they spent their whole life with a clay pipe clenched in their mouth and actually wore a groove into their teeth. They call them pipe notches. Yeah.
And joining up the trenches is revealing more finds by the minute.
Can you still see the clapper in there?
It's intact.
It's an animal bell. You see them in paintings by people like Bruegel. But this one's got decoration on it. It looks like
look
it's...
Look at this.
Yeah, possibly Jacobean, Elizabethan Jacobean. Oh, typical nice. Kind of thing you see on wood carving as well. And there's a tiny shield. Do you see that there? So it's possibly a little stamp of the person that the animal belongs to. Possibly for a horse or something. Perfect condition.
Okay, there's another lump just here.
No,
there. Now, is that arrow above the blip?
Yeah.
So that tells you that that blip on the screen is where the wall is. So you could actually put the cane in, like we've done, and mark the position of the wall.
Although geophys are detecting walls belonging to many different phases of building at Hook Court, our basic aim is to work out the layout of the manor house, which may not have radically changed over the centuries. We know in the 15th century that there were posh living quarters here and another as yet unidentified medieval building here with the moat going around it. Yesterday, we opened up several small trenches in the school playground to find out more about that mystery building, and one of them has paid off. This small trench has revealed the remains of a spiral staircase, although it's difficult to see as only the base of it's left.
Can you see the curving face of the stones running around
very
that
slight
way?
Curve,
very, very slight. You're actually looking at the outer casing of a spiral staircase.
So we now know that there was a spiral staircase linking the two medieval ranges. But the trenches haven't given us any clue about the function of our mystery building. That may not matter, though, because Mandy's dug out a plan given to her in 1994 by an architect who lived here as a boy. His dad, in fact, was the butler here in the 1940s.
So what the butler's son saw, is it?
Yes.
So this is what he could remember of the arrangement of the building, is
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Jonathan can't believe his eyes. This is a detailed plan of the now-demolished north wing.
Hey, now, that's interesting. Look, you see he's got two buttresses there. Yeah. And between them, just there, he's got what he writes as guardrobe opening.
This is a loo, in fact, in the wall.
So what that means is, the guardrobe chute for human waste spilling out on that side of the window.
That's right, and he did talk about that as well, that he could remember it was there.
Do you remember using it?
No.
No, OK, all right.
So the presence of medieval loos tells us that our mystery building contained living quarters.
Where the biggest windows are, in the sleeping...
With the position of the privies key to sorting out the layout of our manor house, Jonathan's gone to take a look at some that still survive a few miles away at Woodford Castle.
Looking for... Well, that'll do. That'll do. Look, that's a guardrobe opening right there. You can get your arm in there.
Wow.
Under there,
It's still there.
It's blocked up now, but that's a chute coming down from, presumably, that chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And everything comes hurtling down here and is either collected in buckets and tipped out elsewhere into various middens or spread on the fields.
Or it's
scoured out by a moat. I'm not sure which in this case.
The guardrobe was next door to the room where you kept your clothes.
Oh, your beauty. It's a lovely
one.
Look
at that.
It's got a restored seat. Hang on, I need to... There we are.
Oh, my goodness.
A little practical demonstration.
How amazing. Ah. And you've got a lovely little light for reading, perhaps, or...
Put your hand over here.
Oh, it's freezing.
Do you feel the draught?
Oh, my goodness, I can see right down it. Wow. But I mean, it's almost still usable.
But think about how this would work, though, if you're storing your clothes in the room next door, which is why you need a big space just for washing your hands, you know, and you had...
And the draft comes straight up.
The ammonia comes up. It's going to be through your clothes, isn't it? Mm. And it's going to keep those moths at bay. So
marvellous.
It makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
And you get a splendid view as well. You could stay here for hours.
That's lovely. My turn.
Remember to put the seat down.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, gosh, it's drafty. It's terribly drafty.
Back at Hook Court, our historian Sam's trying to piece together the history of the owners of this manor house. He reckons it was Sir Humphrey Stafford who built the posh living quarters after his marriage in 1406. And with the help of this graphic featuring one of the teachers, the kids are reminded of how different life was back then. They're especially interested in Sir Humphrey's grandson, who was executed for not committing his troops during the War of the Roses in 1461.
He was actually beheaded, had his head chopped off at Bridgewater, presumably while trying to get back to his safe enclave down here in Dorset. But it was
so
not
So there
to
must be a head somewhere, mustn't there?
Meanwhile, out on the lawn, our joined-up trenches have turned up more walls, but have so far failed to find the Great Hall. We've got at least three separate phases. We've got the first one here, which is this stone bit there, and then across here, and another bit here. It's like a sort of little compressed H shape. That's the earliest. Then we've got this wall here, a little bit of it by where Phil is, and then that long bit there. Cutting through it, we've got this thing here, which is really odd because it's curved. And actually, we've got a fourth phase too, haven't we? Because we've got this early stuff at the bottom.
That's right. That stuff there could actually be earlier than our stones. That could be a timber phase, 12th century.
And it's all covered in material from the 17th century, when it's clear these buildings were demolished. Bridges Trench, in fact, may be turning up the first evidence of the Civil War fire. But what we're really after is finds like this. This is a very posh medieval floor tile.
Now, I don't...
Can I hold it?
Yeah, of course. Now, I don't know if you can see, there's like a pattern impressed in
as
well.
Yeah, we've got certain curved lines here, straight lines.
Yeah, well, I've kind of taken the rubbing of it with a pencil, just to give you an idea of what was going on. I don't know if you can make this out.
It's so intricate, isn't it?
You've got the geometric pattern coming around the outside and then this sort of bit of knotwork in the middle. If this isn't from a great hall or a chapel, I'll eat Phil's hat.
Yeah.
This decorated tile dates to around 1500, part of a design that, when complete, would have looked something like this. What's just dawned on me is that our manor house probably included buildings both old and new. This is a coxcomb tile that would have adorned a roof built in the 14th century. It's the first evidence we have of the manor house at that date, and even better, it ties into the only document we have about the early buildings on this site.
We've got a splendid document known as a license to crenellate, issued by Edward III in 1344 to Robert Sivrawast, King's yeoman, to crenellate his dwelling place at Hook, Dorset.
That's
and
brilliant.
So that implies we've already got a structure here, we've got a king's yeoman here who is given a licence to crenellate, that is to fortify his dwelling.
With battlements.
Battlements specifically, but also may imply a moat.
The moat could have been created in the 14th century. The only dating evidence we have is a 14th to 15th century dagger that was found in the moat in the 1920s. Interestingly, it's a type of knife used by a knight to finish off a wounded opponent. Meanwhile, Jonathan reckons he's found a vital clue to the layout of the manor house. Having already pieced together a picture of the old north wing from the photos taken in the 1960s, he's now got his hands on a painting that reveals some important details about this side of the building.
He's taken the trouble to show an arch there. A little bit of another one too. But that's a tall one, and it looks like it was a route through into the courtyard. It would bring you bang on line with the low end of a hall, wouldn't
you're
it?
You're thinking of gateways,
aren't you? Yeah, I'm still thinking of gateways, yeah. Yeah.
And that squares well with looking at the entrance into the complex as a whole, which seems to be the way we drive up the road.
From that way in.
Yeah, and through the gate where the kids come through, just there.
So now we know the old north wing was actually the gatehouse, the entrance into the site.
Bizarrely, in the 15th century, you were often welcomed into a courtyard house with lodgings with loos and a drawbridge. You had to make your way past the bogs to get in the front door.
This is an important discovery, because typically the Great Hall is situated opposite the entrance, so it should be in the middle of the lawn, more or less where Bridge has opened up her trench. Given this news, Bridge, in fact, is wondering if she may have found the Great Hall. She's got bits of decorative stone from a medieval window, and this stone slab that would have supported a large post.
That could be the crown jewel of the entire dig. if it's in situ.
Now the most recent discovery that there's a wall coming through here has got our expert thinking. So after a few calculations...
If we're talking about 16-foot units, which is your regular medieval pole that a mason might use to set out a building, and occurs time and again, what you've got from that stone to this wall is about 8 feet.
8 feet.
A bit of measuring.
24.
That's 32.
And the realisation that we have another wall coming through.
I didn't know you even had a wall here.
Well, I didn't realise that Joe had already started cleaning it until I just walked up here.
Joe, your achievements are very understated.
Jonathan's now thinking we may have found our great hall, although its position seems different from what we expected.
For the last 2 days, we've been looking for a great hall, and we thought we'd got one in Phil's Trench, going all the way down here. Pretty long, this is. There was a big pad here for a big column to support the roof there, going right down to there. But just in the last few minutes, our ideas have completely changed. Why, Jonathan?
Because I was looking for the logical solution of a hall going in that direction, but Bridget has turned me 90 degrees and persuaded me that it might be to do with practical expediency of an old hall sitting on firm on this site while the rest of the manor develops around it.
With a wall there and a wall there. You've turned Jonathan 90 degrees. This is your theory, right? And you're absolutely convinced that this theory is right?
I'm determined that this theory is right.
John, what do you think of this theory?
Well, I hate to say it, but I'm not for turning.
Who's right? We'll find out tomorrow. Beginning of day three here at Hook Court School, where we're looking for a medieval manor house, and the kids have been keeping diaries about the dig. This is from day two. Seema wrote this. Today it was really cool because the six of us went to wash the pottery. We also saw a cow's jaw, which was interesting and disgusting at the same time. And this one from Connie. They filmed me saying they hoped to find a forgotten medieval manor house. I found it quite hard because there was a big fluffy thing in my face. That's your fault, Steve. But the big news for us on day two was that right at the end of the day, we thought we'd found one of the major buildings stretching from here right over to here, except that Geophys disagreed.
John, everyone was so excited and you brought their dreams crashing to the ground. What was the matter?
Well, it's just the interpretation of the Great Hall being here. I think it's where Phil is, where all the action is. That's where all my strong signals are. I do have things coming out here on the geophysics. They are clear, but not as good as over there.
Mm. Last night, you were very quiet on this debate.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about it. And I mean, I think, yeah, for what you've just said there, I think we've got to join these trenches up here anyway.
Which ones?
This one that Bridget dug yesterday with the ones that at the far end that Matt was digging. I think we need to see the whole of that, so we'll link that up anyway.
But that's not going to tell us anything about what's going on
over
here.
No, I think we need a hole on that, actually. That's the only way to resolve whether it's what you think it is in the ground or not, is just pop a hole in and have a look.
So we're opening up a trench here to look for the other end of what might be a great hall running in this direction. And we're joining up our other trenches on this side of the lawn. Our basic aim is to work out the layout of the manor house. So far, we've established we've got a posh accommodation block here and a gatehouse building with guest lodgings attached to it just here. Now we're investigating the idea that the Great Hall might be aligned north-south instead of east-west as normal. Jonathan's looking at how this might work in terms of the other buildings.
Now, if you do that, you see, you've got to get in one side of the Great Hall, so it's not easy unless you stick the buttery and pantry at one end of it again.
OK, let's move it up a little bit.
That's it. Right, now you need the kitchen to be fairly close by to service the Great Hall, so where's that going to be? Well, Phil's site came up with a pottery, so if you stick the kitchen over there...
Something more in that corner?
Yeah.
Whether we solve the puzzle or not, the kids are simply amazed at how much history is buried under their school lawn.
The roof tile, I think, is it?
Is it?
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah. I mean, these tiles are sort of 14th, 15th century, but they're in a 17th century deposit, so it looks like the late medieval roof still standing at the time of the Civil War, and then a whole shooting match comes down, you know?
Yeah.
The school timetable's been amended to allow the kids to help as much as they can. Some of the older kids are having a go at advanced geophysics. Who knows, they might be able to spot something we missed.
Or maybe that there could be actual building and that could be a wall inside it.
Yesterday, they helped to survey this area of the lawn, and today we're opening up a trench that they'll help to dig. It's targeted on one of the clearest anomalies on the geophys plot.
Well, that's this circular feature on here, look.
Oh, wow.
It's a very, very obvious feature. There's been a lot of debate about what it might be, but I think my money's on it being a dovecot.
Using the magic of graphics, we're able to show the kids the scale of the medieval buildings. These two are walking through what would have been the entrance to Hook Court back in the mid-1400s. Anyone entering the site back then must have crossed a bridge, because we now know that the moat came around in front of the gatehouse. But the big news today is that Stuart doesn't believe the moat ever completely surrounded the manor house. In fact, he doesn't even think this is a moat.
Well, what do you understand by moat?
Well, there's knights in armour outside, and they're trying to get into the house, and they can't because there's this big defensive feature.
Yeah, that's the problem I have when I come to this. Everybody uses the term moat. I mean, I prefer to use the term, at the moment, a water-filled ditch.
Strictly speaking, a moat is a defensive ditch, but Stuart thinks this is designed to impress people rather than keep them out.
This was dug in, say, the late 14th century. People aren't really digging defensive moats in a way, because the nature of the buildings are changing, the nature of the society is changing, and you're starting to get people thinking about decoration and ornamentation and gardens even.
We've been drilling holes into our water-filled ditch and discovered that it's much deeper here compared to where it bends around the site. What's now clear is that this arm of the ditch must have been an extension added in Victorian times, because it doesn't exist on this tithe map drawn in 1840.
So that arm of the moat really potentially only appears between 1840 and 1889.
The strange shape of the ditch shown on the tithe map has got Stuart thinking about the earliest occupation of this site. Our historian Sam has been piecing together the early history, and amazingly we've got the name of someone who was lord of the manor here nearly 1,000 years ago.
Alfric, who we know from other references in the Great Survey, was a king's thane, that is, a warrior who holds special allegiance, personal allegiance, to the king. Indeed, this estate would have been given to Alfric by King Edward the Confessor himself. But what's particularly interesting about him is that he is still a king's thane in 1086 at the time of the survey. In other words, his allegiance switches from Edward the Confessor to the new Norman King William.
It's rather unusual, isn't it, letting an Anglo-Saxon stay on?
Well, you might think it, whether you look the way some people go on about the Norman Conquest, but there was a lot more continuity, I think, when we actually look at some individual test cases, and is often assumed the case.
So we've got some high politics going on here too.
We have in the background.
Is the implication there, then, that Alfric would have actually lived here? There's a possibility of a Saxon residence here.
That is a very reasonable inference to make, not least because we've got so many good analogies for what are called thanely residences, which are often the basis to later Norman strongholds. Yeah. And we know from analogous sources, you may have heard this, Stuart, that a thanely residence has to include a major gatehouse and a belfry, curiously enough, which implies a stronghold.
Yes.
Stuart's thinking it's possible that the ditch as shown on this tithe map might be part of the early Saxon manor, and we'll hear more about that later. Phil, meanwhile, still trying to solve our puzzle of walls belonging to the medieval manor house.
Did your front door go with this now, don't you?
Well, I know. It's the masses and masses and masses of pottery.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this, that's all the same pot.
Yeah. It's all the sort of same sort of 16th, 17th century stuff we've been getting from all around this area, isn't it?
At least this trench has turned out to be relatively uncomplicated. As Mick predicted, this is the remains of a dovecot.
Popped in there.
Yeah, mind on the plastic. Yes.
You know, we call them dovecots, but it's for pigeons. Hello. And do you know why they would have kept pigeons?
Wouldn't they use... They would eat some of them.
Yeah.
And wouldn't they use the droppings as manure?
Very good, yeah, and the feathers for pillows and stuff like that.
There's a pot in there, you can see how it's made up. Okay.
So, how old is this dovecot?
Well, we've got a record of a dovecot here in 1361.
Okay, so that's very old indeed. So.
600 odd years, yeah, it's about right. It's about right.
So, I've been here 6 years and.
You're a mere young whippersnapper, though, you see.
Yeah.
things seem to be going well over in the middle of the lawn, too.
I think it is. It is.
It is.
Lovely.
It's the second piece of medieval glazed jug. We'll have a whole one by the end of the day.
You'd hope so.
Where we're looking for the other end of the Great Hall. And it looks like we've found it.
Whether it goes that way or it's coming this way, we shall need to actually...
No, it definitely does that.
Right.
Comes underneath here and then turns. Yep. But it's still a question whether it's the corner of the Great Hall.
Well, that's right. It's pretty massive, though, isn't it? It sounds massive.
Meanwhile, at the other end of our possible Great Hall, another intriguing find is about to emerge from the soil.
It's not a bit of copper pipe, is it? A bit of war pipe or something. Ooh.
Yep.
It's a tap.
It's a tap.
Look at that.
This is actually a very rare find. Mick reckons it could be as early as 15th century.
I think this is the best find we've had on the site, don't you?
It's the best find we've had for years, that is.
You really think it's that important?
Yeah, I think it's very important, yeah. We're so used to them, we forget that until the 19th century, they're very, very rare, you know.
Yeah.
This tap is likely to have been used with a cistern like this. It means there was running water here, and our manor house is even posher than we thought. But now it's late afternoon and time to start wrapping up some of our trenches.
I should take in the eggs and the young birds out into a sack or a bag or something. You just push yourself round on this central post.
All right, so you can rotate your...
You can go right the way around the middle, you see.
The essential finds here were these pigeon bones. And we can now show the kids what the dovecot looked like. In position on the lawn... ..and inside it. We reckon it could have held 1,000 birds.
But I thought I'd try and give you a different perspective on the place, and that's...
Stuart's ready to tell Mandy how important this site was way back in Saxon times. But first, he's got to break the news about the moat.
It wasn't always like that. On the tide map of 1840, the moat came all the way, like, down like that. I don't know if you like that idea or not, but...
No!
But it's much more interesting. If we move out from here and look at it in the wider landscape... This is footage that we shot from the helicopter yesterday, and the moat, as it were, is in this area here. And you can see as we come away from the site that you're at one end there of a long ridge that comes down here. Can you see?
Yes, it's very clear.
You've got a valley down here and a valley down there. Here.
Which is totally different to what you would think.
It's a very distinct...
You don't realise that, do you?
You don't, do you? Until you get up above it and see it. But
Stuart's keen to point out that this is the real boundary of the manor estate. The house and moat only occupied a small part of it.
The road bends around the edge of the manor, a classic piece of landscape analysis.
But what he's most excited about is that the ditch as recorded on the tithe map is probably Saxon, designed to stop anyone coming along this ridge of higher ground.
Mm-hmm. This is a classic location for a residence of somebody quite important in the Saxon hierarchy. So there's a very strong chance that under here somewhere is that Saxon residence.
Oh.
So what was the ditch of the Saxon... fortification, as it were, was reused in the Middle Ages as a garden feature, as part of the Hook Court, as it were.
And this is Victor's picture of what that Saxon stronghold might have looked like. But right now, I want to know about our medieval manor house. Have we found the other end of our missing Great Hall?
Lads, if we're going to work out what's here, we're going to have to do it fairly quickly, aren't we?
All right. Bottom line is this. We do have a medieval building where we're standing, and it turns out that the 16-foot grid that medieval builders loved was used. It's 16-foot wide, and it's 48 feet long, so that's very neat indeed. And it's probably two storeys, because there's a pad with an oak post supporting the floor deck, so I reckon two-storey building.
And which way does it face?
It goes south to north, so it's not going to be a chapel, and it's not linked, as far as we can see, with our surviving tower, so it's a mystery, isn't it?
It's certainly not a grand hall, though.
No, not a great
hall. That's the main thing, unfortunately.
So does that mean you do have to eat humble pie or don't have to eat humble pie?
I'd have said 50-50.
Pie, but not very humble. Medieval great halls typically looked like this and are open to the roof. Although the structure we've found is of the same high quality, it's two stories high and narrow. Having consulted his books, Jonathan's suggesting that this could be a rare example of a first floor hall. A few have been known in Dorset. This would mean the end of the Great Hall would have lined up with the arched entrance into the manor house. Some of the team aren't sure about Jonathan's latest theory. So where do they think the Great Hall is?
I don't know. I think there's a very, very big building going back that way.
Which I think is what I was saying last night.
Do we have time to put in a test pit or anything? No. What's really needed on this site is to open the entire lawn, but of course that's not possible in 3 days.
What we're suggesting is that perhaps this corner here is the corner of a big building that runs back down there, and that all this rubble in here is actually the fill-in from where they've actually taken the stone out.
If Phil's right, then the Great Hall would be situated here. Jonathan, though, doesn't agree. He thinks this building is more likely to be a large barn, in keeping with the pottery finds from Phil's first trench, which turned up lots of big dishes like this. This is a settling dish for making butter. We have to go with our expert's conclusion that this two-storey building was a first-floor great hall, giving us a manor house that looks something like this. Our reconstruction shows Hook Court in the 15th century, the period when we know most about it. But we think this is pretty much how the manor house would have looked at the time it was set on fire during the Civil War. Soon after, all these medieval buildings were demolished, leaving only the posh lodgings and the gatehouse building standing. These, it said, were much repaired in 1647 by this man, the Duke of Bolton. Once the family had their lands returned to them, after the Civil War. Finally, there's a small presentation to make.
Well, you want us to find out about the history of Hook Court. We may not have done the entire history, but we have done the entire owners of Hook Court in chronological order.
Fantastic!
The genealogy of your school.
Thank you very much. It'll have pride of place in the court.